produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Thursday, March 27th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Remember, marijuana isn't going to re-legalize itself. You can make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. Join up with the talented activists of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws at norml.org. While you're at it, stop by our blog at stash.normal.org. You can check the links on all our news stories, download our PodSafe music, read commentary from myself and other marijuana activists, and leave your comments and response. It's the cannabis community's online home at the blog Only Normal Can Deliver, your daily audio stash at stash.normal.org. Today is Cannabis in the Law Day here at the Stash, and coming up after the news, we speak with attorney Jeff Blackburn in Amarillo, Texas. He has just successfully defended Tim Stevens, a 53-year-old HIV-positive man, using marijuana to treat his chronic vomiting syndromes. Tim was prosecuted for possession of marijuana, and 12 jurors agreed with his medical necessity defense and set him free, which may be a first in a Texas marijuana case. Then Cannabis Carry brings us a great token tune from the UK and a band called The Den Collective with their song, Mary Jane, I've Smoked My Last One. Does that mean they're quitting? Or they have just run out? And to conclude our show, we speak with Skydra Smith-Heisters from the Reason Foundation. She is an author of the new study, Illegally Green, The Environmental Costs of Hemp Prohibition. We've got a lot to cover, so sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Texas patient wins landmark acquittal in medical marijuana case, Amarillo, Texas. A Texas patient who uses medical marijuana to treat the symptoms of HIV won acquittal on marijuana possession charges Tuesday, March 25th, based on a rarely used necessity defense. A necessity defense requires the defendant to establish that he had to break the law to avoid an imminent harm more serious than the harm prevented by the law he broke. This defense has rarely been successful in Texas. However, this jury took just 11 minutes to acquit Tim Stevens, age 53. Stevens had never been in trouble until the Amarillo police arrested him for possessing less than 4 grams of marijuana. As a result of his HIV infection, Stevens suffers from nausea and cyclical vomiting syndrome, a condition so severe he has required hospitalization and blood transfusions in the past. Extensive research has established medical marijuana as an effective treatment for nausea and vomiting associated with HIV/AIDS and cancer chemotherapy. Use is recently acknowledged by the prestigious American College of Physicians. When you can get a victory for medical marijuana in a conservative part of Texas, you know the tide is turning. People's opinions are way ahead of the politicians on this one. The people know that marijuana is relatively safe when used responsibly, and people know that marijuana can be an effective medicine for many conditions. Bear Stearns CEO toked while hedge fund crashed. Now, you've no doubt heard about the collapse of Bear Stearns, one of the major players involved in this subprime mortgage lending crisis that is causing the world's financial markets to lose billions and necessitating a taxpayer-funded bailout. Now, the Wall Street Journal is trying to equate the Bear Stearns CEO's use of marijuana as a Nero fiddled while Rome burned moment. This is from CNNMoney.com. Bear Stearns CEO James Cain fired back Thursday at criticism of his leadership and allegations of inappropriate behavior published in the Wall Street Journal. The Journal said that during what it described as 10 critical days of the crisis in July, Cain was playing in a bridge tournament in Nashville, Tennessee, without a cell phone or an email device. The paper also reported that Cain has sometimes smoked marijuana after bridge tournaments, citing attendees at the tournaments, although the paper did not say whether he did so in Nashville in July. Cain denied one specific alleged incident in 2004 that the paper asked about, but it reported that when it asked more generally whether he smoked pot during bridge tournaments or on other occasions, he said he would respond only to, quote, a specific allegation, end quote. Now, this is the thing about the media that I always like to point out. See, the issue, if any, is not whether the CEO was smoking marijuana. It was that he was out of touch for 10 days during a critical juncture for that financial giant. Whether he smokes pot at the time is irrelevant. It makes him no more or less responsible as a CEO. To understand the inherent bias in the Journal article, try and imagine if the Journal had said that Cain sometimes drank a scotch on the rocks after bridge tournaments. Wouldn't that seem a bit of a non sequitur? So then, bringing up the marijuana use is just a way of slamming the CEO as an irresponsible dolt. The Journal owes us an apology for smearing the good name of tokers everywhere. Comparing us to disgraced CEOs is an insult. Bush pardons 15 convicts and commutes one prison sentence, from FoxNews.com. Washington, D.C. The Justice Department announced Tuesday that President Bush has issued 15 new pardons and commuted one prison sentence. The single commutation announced Tuesday was for a Portsmouth, Virginia woman convicted of attempted drug distribution. Patricia Beckford was sentenced in 1992 to 23 years in federal prison for conspiracy and attempt to distribute more than 50 grams of crack cocaine. Following the president's order, however, Beckford will get out early. Her release is now set for July 24, 2008. Now, of Bush's 15 pardons, four of these were for people convicted of various drug offenses. All have long since served their time or their probation. This pardon merely relieves them from having a felony conviction on their record. One of the convictions was for Anthony C. Folio, a.k.a. Tony Foley, of Santee, California. Under the offense of distribution of marijuana, he was sentenced October 15, 1996, in West Virginia, to 3 years probation. Now, this Folio pardon is interesting. He is now an associate pastor at the Sunrise Community Church in Santee, a community near San Diego, California. As reported in the San Diego Union-Tribune, Folio's crime was selling marijuana, hundreds of pounds. He would buy it in Imperial Beach and sell it in West Virginia while he lived in both places, he said. He said his father, Anthony Folio, founding pastor of the Sunrise Community Church, told him in 1994 that he should turn himself in. He pleaded guilty in West Virginia federal court to one count of selling marijuana. In 1996, he was given 3 years probation with no prison time. About 18 months ago, a former college friend started the paperwork for Folio's pardon. The FBI investigated, and clemency was approved. Folio has been a licensed pastor for 3 years and sometimes preaches about his troubled past. Quote, "It causes me to not judge anyone," he said. "I think mercy is greater than justice," end quote. Well, indeed, Pastor Folio. Now, if we can only get mercy and justice to the thousands of others who are convicted of drug offenses, whether incarcerated or not. Those convictions haunt the person for the rest of their lives when they're trying to apply for work, get student aid, or receive federal assistance. Dutch health minister says marijuana to be exempt from July 1st smoking ban. Amsterdam, the Netherlands. Dutch Health Minister Ab Klink said visitors to coffee shops will be free to smoke marijuana as long as it is not mixed with tobacco, after a smoking ban affecting all restaurants and bars goes into effect on July 1st. The minister was replying to questions tabled by parliamentary colleagues on whether coffee shops will become completely smoke-free when the ban goes into effect. Current tobacco laws in the Netherlands do not cover the smoking of pure marijuana or cannabis in the coffee shops, he said. Coffee shops also will be allowed to set up separate smoking areas for customers who want to smoke marijuana and tobacco, although staff will not be allowed to serve or do other work inside those areas. Minister Klink said he would look into the ban's effect on coffee shops at the end of 2008 or beginning of 2009, including what percentage of coffee shops have opened a separate smoking area. Most of the smoking bans that have been adopted in Europe and the United States point to the danger of the secondhand smoke from tobacco inflicting damage on the lungs of the workers who must breathe it in at work. As research has shown, even the firsthand smoke from cannabis isn't as dangerous as the secondhand smoke from tobacco. It's good to see a country where science and common sense dictate the laws and public health policy rather than the reverse.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Well, as I noted earlier in the podcast, there was a very important court case handed down in Texas on Tuesday where a medical marijuana patient was able to use a necessity defense in order to avoid prosecution under Texas anti-marijuana laws. And I'm joined today by the attorney who successfully defended that case, Jeff Blackburn from Amarillo, Texas. You may remember him as the attorney who defended the African Americans wrongly convicted and rounded up in Tulia, Texas on drug charges. He's the founder of the Innocence Project of Texas and also an attorney on the Normal Legal Committee. He's also on speakerphone with his client, Tim Stevens, age 53 of Amarillo, who was the defendant in this case, prosecuted for holding a very small amount of marijuana, which he uses to treat his HIV positive status. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Now, Tim, apparently the situation that we're dealing with here in Texas is a medical marijuana defense. Of course, Texas doesn't have a medical marijuana law like 12 other states do. So could you just tell our listeners in brief what you were facing and what the case was concerning?
Yes. Well, firstly, I'm a 53-year-old with no previous criminal history. I'm HIV positive, have been for 20 years. I'm a non-progressor, as they call it. But I do have symptoms, even though I don't have haven't progressed or whatever to the full AIDS category. And my malady that I suffer is called cyclic vomiting syndrome, which happens not only with HIV patients, but with chemo, MS, and other patients. Whereas sometimes for days, sometimes even weeks, is chronic. There's nothing but chronic vomiting, and it can be life-threatening, in the sense of if it's prolonged, people have been known. It's not abnormal for people to have bled to death via this syndrome.
Well, that sounds like a very, very difficult condition to live with.
It totally changes your life.
Now, had you been seeing doctors for this condition, and did they try to help you with any sort of pharmaceutical prescriptions, and did that work out?
I've been through the gamut of every medical prescription possible that way, with the exception of Marinol, which typically does not work for this, because once you have the prodrome, I believe they call it, the sense that the onset of this cycle of vomiting is getting ready to begin, nothing will stay down.
So, right.
But besides that, I've been prescribed everything possible.
Yeah, I've always thought it was a bit strange to tell someone that was suffering from chronic vomiting that they needed to swallow a pill.
Well, it doesn't work.
Seems quite counterintuitive. So the only treatment then that has been valuable for controlling this in your case has been the medical use of cannabis. Of course, now this opens you up to prosecution in the state of Texas, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Now, you were caught by the Texas authorities. I understand. I'm not exactly sure of the details of the case, which if it was county or state. But what was the amount you were caught with?
$10 worth, 3 grams.
Three grams of marijuana. Okay. Well, let's turn to Jeff now, who's the attorney who defended Tim in this case. And Jeff, what was Tim facing here as far as punishment from the Texas? You know, it's always said the Texas criminal justice system is pretty harsh. What was he facing?
You know, our motto down here is doing our best to keep up with Mississippi.
Okay.
And so far, we've done a hell of a job at it. On the punishment for a Class B misdemeanor marijuana possession is up to 6 months in jail and a $2,000 fine.
Hmm. And of course, if he's locked up in jail, he's not going to have the cannabis to take care of the chronic vomiting should it reoccur.
Pretty severe penalty, and Texas has absolutely no formal or legal exception like New Mexico and like 11 other states besides New Mexico do. So what we really did was we took a very old doctrine under the law that a law that I don't seem to have seen used very much in cases like this, called the necessity doctrine. And what it says is very interesting, because it says that it's up to a jury to decide whether somebody broke the law, but also whether they were justified in breaking the law, because the imminent harm that they were looking at was so bad that it outweighed the legislative perception of harm that caused them to write the statute. Legal mumbo jumbo, but here's the bottom line. A jury in Texas can decide what they really think of the marijuana law, and they can decide whether it ought to give way when you're dealing with somebody like Tim, who was clearly facing imminent harm that day. That's why this verdict, I think, is ultimately so important. As far as we know, it's the only trial verdict rendered on these grounds in the state, ever. And it's a real good temperature reading of, I think, where people are really at. We're in a very conservative part of a very conservative state, yet the jurors here stood up to the government, relied on this old law, reached back into the past to come up with a decision that I think will and can affect the future of all Texas.
I would think not only Texas, but we could look at other states that might have this same sort of necessity defense.
Absolutely. We are, there are going to be cases where it will work, where it's really applicable.
And when I was reading the reports here, it said it didn't take the jurors very long to come to that decision either.
We tried the case for nearly 12 hours, and it took them 11 minutes to come up with a not guilty.
Wow, 11 minutes. That's amazing. And now, I imagine, of course, you had a lot of opposition in this case from the prosecutors and maybe even from some of the anti-drug zealots there in Texas. What were some of the things they were trying in the case or in the media to try to sway the jurors their way?
Well, I'll tell you something. It wasn't a high-visibility case beforehand, before the trial. We frankly didn't want it that way because I wanted these jurors to know that they were not. That I wanted to really defuse the argument that the state would make that this was about something symbolic or big. The truth is, it was about one guy and one law and one situation. And I'm not saying it doesn't have value beyond our immediate situation, but that's what the jurors needed to focus on.
Right.
And I think that that's why we can say that that turned out to be a good tactic, because as it turns out, they did just focus on our immediate situation. There wasn't a media controversy about it. What there was, though, was a really hotly contested trial, and frankly, they were just law enforcement robots run amok. Basic message was what you would expect. The law is sort of the Judge Dredd approach to the law. You know, the law is the law is the law, that kind of thing. Sort of a Sylvester Stallone-like attitude.
Right.
No exceptions. Nobody gets off. marijuana is an evil, dangerous narcotic. That stuff went over like a lead balloon with these jurors. I'd say the consensus of everybody that showed up for jury duty that day was pretty much, what's the big deal here?
Right.
That's why this case is so important, too. It illustrates how far ahead the people are from the authorities right now. I mean, average people, none of these people are marijuana users, but they're regular people, and they have a heart, and they have some compassion, and I think they've got an open mind. They're way ahead of what the local police and the prosecutors are.
Now, how does this this decision now affect the rest of Tim's life as far as his use of cannabis? Are they going to continue to try to prosecute him, or does this just pretty much keep him safe from the authorities for the foreseeable future?
Well, not really. I mean, it's not going to keep him safe from them. It's going to be up to them. If they want to prosecute him, persecute him, follow him and arrest him, and really prove what jerks they are, then this would be a great opportunity. Maybe they'll do better than that. But I have learned not to expect much from government.
Well said, well said. That just illustrates the need for the activists in Texas to stand up and start fighting for a medical marijuana law in the Lone Star State. We need to protect the people like Tim who are using marijuana merely just to stay alive, just to have a quality of life.
Exactly. And I'll tell you something else, too. I mean, Tim is really educated me on how many, many people, not just Tim, but also the doctor that we had, which is a brilliant, great man named Steve Jennison, who's the director of the medical marijuana program in New Mexico, who testified for us as an expert. Steve and Tim have educated me about how many people all over the country are exposed to totally needless suffering, many times very, very horribly painful suffering, because of these stupid, arcane prohibitions that we still have in place. And I also would like to think that if in Texas more people start getting more lawyers that will stand up and fight these cases, I think we'll see a bigger and bigger trend that might catch the attention of the legislature. It's damn sure about time.
Yeah, it's time for the tide to turn on this. And like you said, the public is way ahead of the authorities and the elected officials on this issue. So I want to remind everyone that you can continue to make a difference by checking out the story on this. It's at stash.normal.org. We've got links to all of the relevant facts of the case. And also, just remember that you can make a difference by calling your legislators and making your opinions known about this. Let them know about the Tim Stevens case and that others like him need the protection of medical marijuana laws in your state. Jeff and Tim, I want to thank you very much for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you very much for having us. I couldn't ask for a better podcast to be part of.
Well, thank you very much. And Tim, good luck to you, and we hope you stay safe from the authorities down there.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville, the Associate Director of Oregon Normal, a chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. I'm proud to announce the release from Oregon Normal of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act Handbook. This is the definitive guide for the patient, caregiver, or grower in Oregon trying to learn the ins and outs of our medical marijuana program. The guide answers common questions from, how do I register with the state to use cannabis medicinally? And what are the possession limits regarding plants and medicine? To questions like, what do I tell my landlord or the police about my medical marijuana? And what if my doctor won't help me with a marijuana recommendation? The handbook also contains a complete copy of the Oregon Revised Statutes governing medical marijuana. For your own copy, check out our website at ornorml.org. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Welcome, beautiful stashers. Often the difference between a great strain of cannabis and a really great strain of cannabis is a cool name. I fondly remember my first encounter with Purple Kush and Maui Wowie. Well, today's musical hit from the band The Den Collective makes a point of calling out some of today's more notorious smoke. The hit, Mary Jane, I've Smoked My Last One, happily strums its way into my heart. The Den Collective is a five-member band from the UK that easily slips between electric and acoustic sounds. Add this track to your next Cannabis Party mixtape. You can learn more about The Den on their webpage at purevolume.com. You can also find their music at music.podshow.com and the download through our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. This is The Den Collective and Mary Jane, I've Smoked My Last One.
Individuals.
Yeah.
And we just want y'all to know that weed helps, you know what I'm saying? So I just want y'all to stop messing with the people who need it to live. It's helping people out there with cancer, AIDS, you know what I'm saying? So y'all gotta let it be, man. Legalize this.
Well, we're very excited here to have another guest with us here on the Daily Audio Stash, Skydra Smith-Heisters, who's a policy analyst at the Reason Foundation in Los Angeles. She's just authored a study called Illegally Green, the Environmental Costs of Hemp Prohibition. Skydra, thanks for joining us here on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this was a very interesting study where you were just taking a look at how our economy is affected by hemp prohibition. Let's give our listeners just a thumbnail sketch of what the report tells us.
Well, this really attempts to take a comprehensive survey of some of the scientific and technical information that's out there right now on industrial hemp cultivation in other countries where it's legal, and just looks at some of the key environmental questions and policy problems that we have in the U.S. at this time. Things like the emissions from energy intensive manufacturing and toxins released from other manufacturing processes.
Let's break it down by subject here. You know, when we're talking about the use of hemp in many ways, one of the sayings we have here in the hemp movement is that anything you could make from a tree or a barrel of oil, you can make from hemp. And with the ongoing problems in the Middle East and the rising costs of oil and gasoline, certainly the use of hemp as a biofuel had to be one of your considerations.
Sure, that's probably the greatest irony that we looked at, is that right now there's a big emphasis on boosting U.S. production of biofuels, and a lot of subsidies going into crops such as corn, which are probably in a lot of ways environmentally inferior to a crop like hemp. That doesn't mean that we would want to replace all of our fuel production with any crop, much less hemp, but it is a pretty cool irony at a time when we're trying to boost that kind of production.
Well, especially when we talk about the increase in world hunger, and when we turn our economic engine over to using corn as a fuel rather than a food, that takes away from the people that are going to need to use the corn as a food, does it not?
It does, but again, this isn't really about replacing whole crops or whole industries. It's about introducing a crop into the mix of other crops already being produced. So when you talk about food crops, one of the things that plagues food crops and the productivity per acre of food crops are the introduction of pests and things like that into monocultures where you're repeating one crop over and over and over again. And so if you have the opportunity to introduce a fiber crop in with the rotation of food crops, you could actually be boosting some of your food production in certain areas. And hemp has been shown through some studies to have that that quality.
And, of course, other benefits of hemp, I would imagine, would include its resistance to pests and less need for pesticides.
That's definitely one of its strong points, is that compared to some comparable crops and in other industrial applications, it does need fewer pesticides. It appears to use fewer fertilizers compared to some other crops. Less water, certainly, than growing cotton in the Imperial Valley in California or that sort of thing.
So cotton would be another one of the crops, that we could talk about. Cotton for denim jeans and clothing and all the other things we use cotton for. Are there any other crops other than corn or cotton that hemp could possibly be introduced to help produce those textiles?
Yeah, hemp really is a fiber crop. So any other fiber crop it could be comparable to in some uses. It's also a biomass crop, so that would be an application where you're looking at the cellulose content, something like cellulosic ethanol or other fuels. It's an oil seed crop, so it has potential in biodiesel, although it's probably not as productive as canola or some of the other biodiesel crops. And then actually, it's probably one of the most promising industrial applications isn't in comparison to another crop, but in comparison to mineral and petrochemical fibers, for instance, in automobiles using fiberglass and petroleum mats and the insulation of those automobiles, which is the current practice, there's a lot of demand to introduce more natural fibers into those applications.
Yeah, we always look back to history and Henry Ford building a car that used hemp products as part of the chassis and the body of the car. And I've recently blogged on a few stories where they're using a hempcrete, which is a hemp concrete mix to help in building materials in homes.
Because the production of cement and lime building materials is really carbon intensive in terms of the energy input and the carbon emissions from that. So anywhere where you can introduce more biological feedstocks, you're helping to close the carbon cycle.
Excellent. Now, I imagine, though, this being a reasoned study that you also looked, we're talking about the economic impact here of hemp prohibition along with the environmental costs. Do you have figures on what this is costing Americans with regard to our tax dollars, our budgets, or how we could compare that to the other industrialized nations that have legalized the production of hemp?
I think that's pretty pretty speculative. This is a big country. There's a lot of different agricultural regions, and one of, I'd say one of the faults of the argument against legalizing hemp is usually has to do with how big of a market it would be. And that's not really the point. The point here is that whether or not the country as a whole, farmers, manufacturers, consumers are losing out as far as the products that they can buy and use, which is obviously true. Reason Foundation's interest is really just because we're big believers in the idea that regulated markets can address environmental and public safety issues better than these mandates. So, better than a product ban which criminalizes an entire industry. So where the actual losses occur is pretty speculative.
Well, there are many states now that have laws on their books to regulate the growing of hemp, North Dakota, Montana, and such. Or in the process of trying to get those laws. But, of course, they're all hinging on the federal government's ban of hemp because it looks like marijuana. So we'll continue to fight against that silly ban. And maybe you're right as far as, you know, the economic imperatives leading to a better environmental future for all of us through the introduction of hemp into some of these industries. We want to thank Skydra Smith-Heisters from the Reason Foundation. She's a policy analyst there and the author of Illegally Green, The Environmental Costs of Hemp Prohibition. We'll have a link to the study and to the Reason Foundation on our website at stash.normal.org. And Skydra, thanks for joining us on the Stash today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another cannabis quote from Stephen King, the famous novelist. Quote, "I think that marijuana should not only be legal, I think it should be a cottage industry. It would be wonderful for the state of Maine. There's some pretty good homegrown dope. I'm sure it would be even better if you could grow it with fertilizers and have greenhouses." End quote. So that explains The Shining and The Stand and Cujo. I wonder where you came up with all those great ideas. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for tuning in. Take care of each other, tokers.